Well, good morning, everyone. Welcome to Live Dharma Sunday for December 20th, 2015. Koyo Kubose here. So very, very glad you joined us on a nice wintry morning. Well, in the news, in the media coverage of all these political debates recently, I was wondering how the donkey and elephant came to be symbols of the political parties. So I Googled and so forth, and I learned that Thomas Nast, he was a cartoonist for Harper's Weekly, and he was the one that sort of popularized drawing Democrats and elephants to represent the Republican parties. And although that association has some history before that, he was the one that really put it into popular culture through his cartoons. And they will also mention that he was the one who depicted Uncle Sam to represent the United States, and he also modernized Santa Claus. Before that, Santa Claus was sort of a more religious, somber person depicted as that, and he made the jolly red-suited Santa in his cartoons. And this reminded me of, you know, since this is the holiday season, and when you go shopping, you see Santa Claus all around in the shopping malls or wherever. And it reminded me of an article I once wrote for our newsletter that has to do with Santa Claus. But first, some background. When I was in Japan, living in Japan, we lived in the neighborhood of Daitokuji Temple, major headquarters of Rinzai Zen. And in Japanese language, you know, there's a, for Dharma is the word ho, H-O. And it that's when you see a certain Chinese kanji written character for Dharma called ho. And then you can see in Japanese language, ho, for example, ho-wa. Wa is a talk. So ho-wa means a Dharma talk. Okay. Or ho-ji, where ji is a gathering. So ho-ji means a Dharma gathering, usually like a memorial service or something like that. So, but the ho by itself is just Dharma. And these monks from Daitokuji Temple, every once in a while, they would do takohatsu, which is translated as, as begging. But it's really a spiritual practice of learning humility. And so what the monks do is they walk singly by themselves, individually, in the neighborhood. And they have their traditional garb on, and they have a sort of a bamboo. They're not looking around, just kind of looking right at the ground in front of them. Somebody else, you cannot see their eyes or their, you know, top of their face. So no social contact as they walk around. And they have a rakusu, which is a kind of like a bib around their neck, and then they could lift up the bottom part, and it makes a little sort of a bib-like thing. And then people can put coins, money into it on that cloth as they hold it up. that's the way you can make a donation to the temple. And I guess this is patterned after how in Gautama Buddha's day, you know, they had all the monks had a begging bowl, and they would get food. The monks, and in a sense, they gain merit through their charity and support. So it helps. It's kind of a spiritual practice for both sides, the giver and the receiver. Okay. And of course, then the monks, this is in the old days, this was their food, and so that they didn't have to have jobs, that they were full-time monks devoted to spiritual practice. Now, all that is background. The way that the monks let the people in the neighborhood know that they are in their neighborhood, they say the word ho as they walk. Sort of almost like a chanting. Just saying that word, ho. Hear it. Well, for example, we go out to open our front door and maybe have a 100 yen coin, and we stand there, and then they come up and we put our hands together, we gassho, he lifts up his rakusu, drop the gassho again, and he's on his way. So I associate pull, okay, hearing that pull being chanted. And then, this is a little bit humorous, I guess, but during the holiday season, I hear Santa, when you go to the malls and things, the Santa saying, ho, 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 United States. All over during the Christmas time, you hear Santa saying, proclaiming the good news of the Dharma. Isn't that neat? I really got a kick out of that. And I wrote an article about it. Oh, ho, ho, ho. Proclaiming the good news of the Dharma. And, following right along with that, I'm going to start a new ritual, tradition, custom. Someone sent me a list of puns, and I thought, hey, it might be nice to share these puns on Live Dharma Sunday, because they add a little humor, and somebody, humor is important. Okay, a little smile. Plus, it's good for your health. You know, if you have a little chuckle, there's a physiological response in your body, in the endorphins in your brain or whatever, the physiological things. And I also remember there was a good Dharma friend in Chicago. She always listened to Click and Clack, Saturday morning, 10 o'clock. Click and Clack is car talk. Two brothers who, they have a call-in show, and the people call in to get advice about car repair. And they also are syndicated in a newspaper column. It's Car Talk. but they're very funny guys, okay? And the way they laugh, it really brightens up your day to hear them laugh. And she told me about this. She always calls in, even though she has no interest in car repair. And so anyway, here is what I call the three treasures of puns. I'm going to give you three every week. Okay. Puns are punishing. These to make you smile, to groan, and to shake your head. Here's the first one. how does Moses make tea? He brews it. He brews it. Get it? Number two, venison for dinner again? Oh, dear. Number three, a cartoonist was found dead in his home. Details are sketchy. Okay, I want to go on to introduce our Dharma Glimpse for our guest. His name is Kenneth Kenyo, and he lives in Colorado. And he was part of our recent LM7, Lay Minister 7 group, that was inducted this past May. And so let's hear from Kenneth Kenyo.
Fatally fooled. How often have I seen a dark blob at the bottom of an overhead light fixture? If let go long enough, it can effectively block quite a lot of light from leaving the fixture. The blob, of course, is the sad graveyard of curious insects seeking refuge from something or merely drawn to the flame of light and heat. At this time of year, the few hardy insects still around probably are looking for warmth as they're reminded of the halcyon days of summer and look for it anywhere it can be found. The other evening, as I was sitting in an ecumenical pre-Thanksgiving service, I idly gazed upward and saw two Asian beetles crawling around and around the outer surface of a large light fixture, evidently looking for a way to get a lot closer to this wonderful thing, emanating light and heat. What they also evidently did not notice were two of their fellows on the inside, also crawling around and around, probably looking for a way out. I was struck with the familiar saying about being careful what you ask for and how we creatures need to keep learning this old lesson over and over as around and around we crawl. May it be so.
That was short and sweet. Fatally fooled. You know, Dharma teachings are all around us. And if we look at bugs that get attracted to the light and warmth and then get trapped in a light fixture and then apply it to ourselves, where we are attracted to something without seeing the wider perspective of things, it's sort of like another article I read about similar teaching was bait and fishing, where you have some bait on a hook and you're attracted to that bait, then you get hooked. And how not to get hooked? To cling, to get attached, to get caught by something in which you then are victimized by it. So something, some kind of bait. Okay. And you got to be aware or beware of the hook and so forth. Maybe this is just, or like a mouse trap. Jeez. And bam. And how can we apply this to other illustrations of things in one's life? Can we learn that lesson? This is, I remember different Dharma teachers in on this theme of how we get fatally fooled. Of course, well, something that we want, but it's not good for us. Maybe calories? How is it that there's an approach avoidance gradients, you know? And how we are somehow, we have a goal and then hidden unknown consequences. And this consequences is, well, karma. Karmic causes and conditions. And I remember my father used to teach in the Dharma school children. That was the Buddhist term for Sunday school children. He says two illustrations of karma to children in his talk. And he said, you know, if you eat too much candy, you know what's going to happen. You get a stomachache. Now, a little bit of candy is okay after dinner for dessert. If you eat a lot of candy, you have to know, you might get a stomachache. And the second illustration was, then he would tell a children, you know what happens if you spit up in the air? It comes right back on your own face. And as growing up in the temple as a child, illustrations of karma so many times. And one time I was asked to speak at a Montessori school. A friend had some children in there, and I guess in terms of religious plurality or something like this, to talk about Buddhism to kindergarten, first grade, young kids. And so I visited once and I told these two stories. I said, what happens if you eat a lot of chocolate? Okay, are you going to get sick? And then I said, you know, what happens? You spit up in the air, straight up in the air. And then a little bit later on in the talk, I was sort of summarizing, recapping. And I said, yeah, and then so what happens if you spit straight up in the air? And one girl sitting right in the front, very excitedly, you know, kids are so fresh and spontaneous, uninhibited, said, yeah, you're going to get a face full of chocolate. She combined the two illustrations. If you're chewing chocolate and then you spit up in the air, it's going to come right back on your face. Kids are so precious. And so I was thinking about, I saw in a magazine, there's a big ad, full page ad, and it was a lady smiling and holding a tray of cookies, and there was a big circle with the words in there, said, how to protect yourself from your holiday self. And it was an advertisement for medication for stomach trouble if you overindulge in the holidays. That's what it was. Protect yourself from your holiday self. But my first thought when I glanced at this advertisement was how to protect yourself from your holiday self. By holiday self, not for overindulgence in food, but the stress of hosting and putting on holiday get-togethers. It's a good stress, but it's also hectic, still hectic. Okay? And, you know, if you're the host, you have to clean up your house. You have to make sure you get all the plates, you know, all the preparation, the drinks, clean the house. Sometimes tempers get short if your spouse is watching football and not helping out with the preparations, it could lead to some acrimonious interactions. And isn't it ironic that a good thing has the bad stuff in it? It's sort of like I try to always tell my kids, maybe they get a gift, and then, hey, you got a better gift than me, or something like this. Or they get a nice drink or something, and there's one, and they say, oh, you drank too much, and you didn't share. And I said, gee, isn't it kind of too bad that a gift or something good to drink creates all this friction between the siblings, and they all get pushed out of shape? I mean, and in the same way, nice holiday party, but they had a domestic quarrel and bad feelings. Okay. And this reminds me of a nugget phrase. We use nuggets in our lay ministry program, where in every reading assignment, study guidelines say, find a nugget, your personal nugget, Dharma teaching. And this nugget, in the case of a couple, this is a story that I read. This couple, and they were in a third world country, and their time, assignment time was up, and they're leaving, and this boy, native boy, gave him a seashell as a farewell gift. And they said, oh, these seashells are only found on the seashore that's several miles away from this where they're located. And so they said, gee, you must have walked a long way to get this gift. And the boy smiled and said, long walk, part of gift. And this really, impacted them. And so they used this as a nugget to help themselves in their own personal growth. And the way they used it was during the holiday season, or any time that they were hosting a gathering in their home, and they were making preparations for the happy get-together, and they started to get stressed out in the preparations. The preparations is part of the good event. So don't say, oh, this, you got to do this, all this work in order to have the fun. But no, the work is part of the joy of putting it on for people and having a good time. So don't get stressed out during the preparations. Just consider it part of the festivities. And the way they remind each other of this is when one person starts to get stressed out, a long walk. Praise, long walk. Okay. To say that the means is the end, part of it. Don't say, this is just the means to an end. Okay. The means is part of the end. Okay. It's a great non-dualistic oneness teaching. Okay. So these are some associations I had this morning. And that's all for today's broadcast. Till next time, keep going, and you have a very wonderful day. Thank you.